Welcome to the latest edition of the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast, brought to you by Qubit, the trusted experts in analytics. Our goal is to cut through the jargon and hype around analytics and data science and share practical advice to guide you on your analytics journey. You can find us at qubit.com, that's Q-U-E-B-I-T.com. Thank you for joining me today. I'm A.G. Tan. In episode 14 of the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast, my colleague Beth Thomas and I had a great conversation about financial planning and analysis, or FP&A. I made a comment on the podcast that FP&A people are often unsung heroes in companies. Their job is to transform raw data through analysis to create reports that help companies make better decisions. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that the FP&A function is the original core analytics function in any company. And this is an analytics podcast, after all. Before we started talking about big data, machine learning, artificial intelligence, and predictive models, there was financial planning and analysis. Here are a few things non-FP&A people don't always understand about FP&A. Your enterprise resource planning system, or your ERP system as it's often known, whether it's SAP, Oracle, NetSuite, Workday, Microsoft Dynamics, or one of the many other options, never meets all the needs of FP&A. The word planning in enterprise resource planning is a misnomer. Why? Because the first function of an ERP system is to track and support the everyday operations of the business, which is all about detailed transactions. Which invoice for what was sent to whom at what time? Which order was placed by customer C for product X? The job of FP&A is, more often than not, to aggregate and summarize data from the ERP system and then present it to managers and decision makers in a way that supports decision making. For decision making, your CEO is usually less interested in one little invoice out of thousands and more interested in how much of product X is selling in total or by region or to your top customers or in specific sales territories. Are we selling more X than we were last year or less? How are sales of product Q doing compared to product X? And so on. FP&A is like a factory that takes raw ERP and other data and churns out things like reports, charts, dashboards, and the like. What happens in the factory? It depends. Sometimes when everything is perfect and nothing ever changes around you, you will be able to run a report directly out of your ERP system that adds everything up correctly. More often than not, your FP&A professional will have to massage, transform, filter, and reconstruct the data that comes out of the ERP system in order to get it into the right form to answer management's questions. Is this puzzling? It doesn't sound like it should be so hard, should it? Well, here's a hint. How easily can you figure out right now the total assets owned by your household? If it's just you and you have your checking, savings, investment, and mortgage accounts at one institution, it might be easy enough to log in online and get all the information. But if it's more than just you, and you shopped around for the best deal on your mortgage, and your company contributes to a 401k someplace else, you might need to do a little bit of work. So, to help you understand, I am going to tell you the story of a global financial consolidation project I was involved in a couple of years ago. This company I'm going to tell you about is a pretty typical mid-market high-tech manufacturing firm with annual revenues just under $500 million. Although they're headquartered in the United States, they have operations all around the world. They have grown by acquisition and operate a diverse range of businesses. For example, they design, make, and sell chips and sensors to the military, but also have a business that creates training videos for the commercial space. They sell pieces of hardware to the public and retail stores, while also charging subscription services for information to businesses. Every month, their FP&A team needs to produce consolidated financial statements, income statements, balance sheets, cash flow statements, a bunch of management reporting reports, and so on for the entire company, as well as for each individual business entity. In case you're not an accountant, consolidated means that everything needs to be added up. In the same currency, of course, because it doesn't make sense to add British pounds to Singapore dollars and then to US dollars. So here's where it gets a little bit more complicated. Because they grew by acquisition, they inherited a number of ERP systems. Each ERP system was implemented independently to different requirements and standards. One entity might have four different revenue accounts, while another might have a single sales account. Company cars might be a large expense in Japan, but not in the UK. One ERP system might capture data by region and channel, while another might capture data by product and customer. And here's another secret. Let's say your company implemented SAP as your ERP system, and you go out and buy another company that also uses SAP. Does this make it easier? Not really. All the same issues persist because every SAP or any ERP implementation is specifically tailored to the specifications of the customer. What is one to do? Well, the first step is to recognize that you have a data management problem, which is what this company wisely recognized. So they invested first in building a data mart, built on a popular relational database with direct connections to each ERP source system. The data mart pulled in a copy of general ledger account balances, not all of the detailed transactions that resided in the ERPs, but just the balances, and summarized those to the available analytical dimensions like product, customer, region, and so on. The data mart included programming code that organized the data by month or accounting period in a consistent way. For some ERPs, calculating the correct opening balances for balance sheet accounts required special logic. The relational data mart took care of all of this. Now, they could have done more in the relational data mart, but instead this company decided to do something else for the rest of the project. Why? Well, there were really three, or maybe three and a half reasons. Reason number one. They knew from experience that their management team would change the reporting requirements from year to year as their strategy evolved to meet the business environment. The way in which management wanted to look at the business might change. One year they might be interested in reporting by product, another by region, another by segment, and a third year they might combine entities to create something completely new. Therefore, the FP&A team needed maximum flexibility in how the data was mapped and organized for reporting purposes. Because of tight turnaround times and unclear requirements, and by the way, it is not unusual for a CFO or a CEO to think something up over dinner and then go in and ask to see the data organized in the way that he or she just imagined. Because of these tight turnaround times and unclear requirements, the FP&A team needed more control than they felt they would have with a relational database. They are a very small team, and while they are pretty tech savvy, they are not IT professionals. So the exercise of mapping is a great example. IT professionals who have worked on any large data warehousing project know exactly what I'm talking about. Mapping is the process of transforming your data into an equivalent but standard form. While you're doing it, you need to take into account the kinds of reporting and analytics you intend to do. So, if you're doing a financial consolidation mapping, one of the things you first need to do is define a global chart of the general ledger accounts and then create mappings account by account from the original ERP system to your global chart. And you repeat this for every single ERP system because each ERP system probably uses something different for their revenue accounts or their cash accounts and so on. So it's usually a series of lookup tables, but it can get complicated. For example, you might say that the revenue account for subscription services maps to a different global account than the revenue account for retail stores. It's not necessarily a one-to-one mapping. Reason number two, currency translation would need to be modeled according to generally accepted accounting principles or GAAP rules. Relational databases are really good at applying code at the detailed transaction level, but there are other tools that are much better at doing calculations at a summarized level. I won't bore you with the details, but before you go thinking that you know what currency translation is, let me throw some words at you that you can Google. Think about transaction currency versus functional currency versus reporting currency. Think about balance sheet versus income statement currency translation modeling. Average versus ending rates. The cumulative translation adjustment, or CTA. This is all fun stuff for the FP&A nerd, and it makes for some interesting modeling challenges. Reason number three. Other accounting type stuff like intercompany elimination entries and other adjusting journal entries would also need to be applied. Oh, sorry. What are intercompany eliminations again? Let's do a quick segue. Let's suppose that I'm a holding company and I own two companies. My first company reports $100 in sales, and my second company reports $200 in sales. How much should I, the owner of these two, report in total sales? Well, maybe it's $100 plus $200, which is $300, right? But suppose $50 of the first company's sales were made to the second company that I also own. And suppose $100 of the second company's sales were made to the first company that I also own. These transactions between companies I own are called intercompany transactions. If I report $300 of sales, I'm clearly overstating my results. It's more like $150. Now, why couldn't you do this in the DataMart? Well, before you can do an intercompany elimination or even add everything up, you need to get everything onto the same basis. It needs to be mapped and then translated to the same currency. If you're not doing these things in your DataMart, and I've given you reasons why we're not, you certainly can't take this step there. Last but not least, let me just mention reason 3.5. Some of the smaller entities at this company we worked with didn't have real ERP systems, and they would submit their results to the corporate office in Excel spreadsheets. These Excel spreadsheets needed to be easy to incorporate into the overall model. So for all these reasons and a few others, this company decided to invest in a special purpose data management solution for the main part of their global financial consolidation. They chose a multidimensional or OLAP database technology that could be owned by the FP&A function and which supported all of the kinds of modeling needed to meet their requirements. An important plus was that this tool could connect directly with Excel spreadsheet reports, which provided additional flexibility and empowerment. Now, let's talk about Excel, Microsoft Excel. Excel is both the best and the worst tool available to an FP&A person. It's the best because it gets the job done. With Excel, you are totally empowered, and regardless of what strategic view of your business your boss dreams up overnight, a talented Excel programmer, because that is what the best FP&A people are, will be able to figure it out. IT folks don't always get this. There is no data governance, they say. Why can't you define your requirements properly first? Excel is prone to mistakes. It has no controls. It is barely auditable. These criticisms are all 100% true. And yet, Excel persists. And the reason is a human one. As long as your CEO can imagine a different structure or view of your business, one that may not be reflected in any existing system, there will be a need for Excel. Furthermore, these imaginings are rarely fully formed. They are more like an outline of an idea that the artist, the FP&A professional, needs to try and capture and reflect. And before we put the blame on CEOs and business executives who don't understand the nature of data, let us also point out that business is inherently a creative activity. Which products should you bring to market? How do you beat your competition? Any of these musings can lead to vague questions that a financial analyst may be tasked with answering. And yet, it can affect standard reporting as well. At this company I'm telling you about, they had introduced a concept called segment reporting. Segments did not exist anywhere in any of the ERPs. They were sometimes just a product and sometimes a combination of product and business entity. Revenue was broken out by segment in the company's annual report. Investors were monitoring the performance of the company by segment. And yet, segments were not in any of the ERPs. Why? Because the concept of a segment did not exist when the ERPs were implemented. This kind of thing happens all the time. You can't plan to replace your ERP systems when it happens, which is where Excel comes to the rescue. Excel is the best, except when it's not. Specifically, Excel is at best a 2 or 2.5 dimensional modeling tool. Nowadays, you can load 1 million rows of data into an Excel sheet, better than the old 65,000 row limit, but it's still a limitation. Excel is not very good for collaboration. Often you end up with multiple copies that different people might take in different directions, and then figuring out which one is the correct copy is hard. Excel is not very secure. It's also very easy to make mistakes and errors, but very hard to check and find them. I would sum it up this way. Excel is the best tool you have until you need to scale. Once you have more data coming in from more different systems manipulated by more than one person for a bigger audience, you will run into trouble. Fortunately, there is a better way. There are several products on the market, often labeled as planning software, financial reporting software, or financial consolidation software, that effectively serve as a type of database behind Excel. The best of these special purpose multidimensional database technologies, as I mentioned earlier, can be owned by finance people and often can do more than their label advertises. These tools are sophisticated general purpose modeling and analytics tools in their own right and are well worth the investment when your issues of scale have pushed beyond Excel's boundaries. Examples include planning analytics from IBM, formerly known as TM1, adaptive insights from Workday, and others. It's hard to buy into this idea when you contemplate the business complexity of what you do and you feel a level of comfort that you can at least get it done with Excel. I get it. But here are some reasons to take a closer look. How quickly can you turn around your models and reports and get relevant information out to those who need it? How sure are you that everything is correct? What is the cost of a reporting mistake? Are there types of analyses that you simply do not have time to do that would be valuable to the business? Time is money and knowledge has value. So if your vendors and competitors are getting better information more quickly than you, what might you be missing out on? It's not just about producing financial reports to submit to the SEC. It's about running your business better. At the company that is the subject of the story, they understood this. Here's a quote from the Senior Director of Financial Planning and Analysis at the end of the project. By moving from an Excel-based consolidation to IBM Planning Analytics, we're seeing a significant time savings in our monthly closing process. As opposed to chasing down data and entries, we can now invest more time analyzing and interpreting our results. Having consistent and reliable financial data that is easy to access has improved our internal reporting by leaps and bounds. So there you have it. And we haven't even talked about the planning part yet. That's a whole other story, which we'll save for another time. Thank you very much for listening. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. We would love to hear from you. Do you have anything you would like to ask Qubit about analytics? You can tweet us at AskQubit or email us at info@qubit.com. That's info@QUEBIT.com. Until next time.